tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 19th of June 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. I'm afraid we don't have Grandpa Dan with us this week. You're just going to have a solo podcast from myself, but we do have a new episode of Patriotic History on straight after this finishes on the Radio Albion stream. And it will also be published at the radioalbion.com website. And this week we are looking some more at the battle between Harold Hardrada and Harold Godwinson. For people who are interested in British history, they might find that an interesting show. And I produce that with my co-host, Jeff Roberts, who is also the publisher of Armreg Books. That's Germar Rudolph's book publishing company. So check that out after this finishes. I'm not going to do the topic that I did have picked today to do with Grandpa, because I think that would be a good one to do with Grandpa, and I'm going to save that one until next week. But what I do have here is a bit of positive news from the European Union. And I think this is the first time I have ever said those words together in a sentence, good news and the European Union. And we're going to take our quotes today from Breitbart.com. And the headline is, Send Them Back. EU Parliament passes major deportation reforms, including third country return hubs. I never thought I would see European Union MPs all chanting, Send Them Back. But apparently they were. The European Parliament passed legislation on Wednesday that is set to transform the way the bloc handles deportations, including by establishing return hubs in third-party countries outside the European Union. And that's what Britain was hoping to do with Rwanda. It was hoping to turn Rwanda into a return hub so that people that broke into the country could then be sent to Rwanda while they awaited to find out about their asylum claims. And the left went wild about that, and the lawyers went wild about it, and they prevented this from actually happening. And it just cost millions and millions of pounds to actually get nowhere. And I was saying at the time that it was because it was promoted in the wrong way. It was promoted by the Conservative Party as this was going to be some kind of punishment. It was going to be punitive. It would prevent people from wanting to come to Britain. I mean, in actual fact, they should have promoted it as it being a good idea, because most of the people that are coming into Britain are coming from Africa. Rwanda is an African country. It means they will be among their own people. It means they will still be among their own culture. There won't be cultural differences. There won't be language differences. It will be the same temperate climate that they're used to. There were all sorts of grants that were being made available so that people could set up businesses in Rwanda. And Rwanda actually wanted these people to go there. It wanted people to come to Rwanda and set up businesses. They would have got healthcare there. They would have got housing there. It was a good deal. But instead of promoting it like that, the Conservatives promoted it as this will be a living hell for these refugees, and therefore they won't want to come to Britain. So we'll have to see what happens with this new law that they have in the EU, which says that these return hubs can be set up in third-party countries and it doesn't break any human rights. So the chance of Send Them Back, Conservatives and populists join forces in Strasbourg this week to finally pass a new European regulation on returns, which will update previous rules written in 2008 years before the first major European migrant crisis in 2014. And another positive side to this is where it says conservatives and populists. Again, this is something you don't often see. A lot of the time, you see the so-called conservatives denouncing the populists and calling them racists and refusing to work with them because they are the so-called far right. Well, the same thing's happened in Germany, hasn't it, with the Alternative for Deutschland. They're actually now, I think, the largest party in Germany, but they can't actually govern because none of the other parties will form an alliance with them. None of the other parties will work with them and form a coalition. So this is, again, is something positive we see here, because the conservatives and the populists all got together in order to push this act through the European Union. The successful vote not only demonstrated that the disparate factions on the right can work together, something that is often prevented at the national level, but also showed the extent to which the Overton window has shifted on immigration in just a few years. And it has massively shifted. In the time since I went to prison, I mean, some of the things that I went to prison for was using the word invaders to describe the illegal immigrants. In the very week that I was in court, Suella Braverman referred to it as an invasion. And it's now become quite common that people refer to the illegal immigration as an invasion. And I did say afterwards, it's not really quite right to call it an invasion, because these people have effectively been invited here by our government. We put them up in four-star hotels. We give them all sorts of things that they wouldn't have in their own home countries. And in actual effect, it's like they've been invited to come over here by all these rewards that they're given when they get here. So it's not really entirely accurate to call it an invasion. But the fact is, Suella Braverman called it that. And that just shows you that the Overton window has shifted, that just general members of the public now refer to it as an invasion. Whereas a few years back, when I referred to it as an invasion, that was described in the court as a heinous crime, a hate crime, that I was using terminology such as invasion. So the Overton window has certainly shifted. And I know nationalists like to say, well, that's because of us. We've been pushing these issues. But there are a couple of other things that have helped push it. Number one is the increase in rapes and murders being carried out by the people of immigrant heritage. And that has helped to wake people up to this. And also with Donald Trump in office, even though his what he's done in Iran is absolutely ridiculous, the fact that he has had an administration around him that are anti-mass migration and they speak out about this, again, that has helped to push the Overton window. It's definitely been good for Europe, for immigration-wise, having the Trump administration. It may not have been good for Europe with this ridiculous war in Iran, but as far as having people quite high up in the American administration condemning what Europe is doing with mass migration and condemning it as a threat to Western civilization itself is not something I ever thought I would see. So I have to be thankful to Donald Trump for that. And the Overton window has shifted. I mean, you can have as many alternative people, smaller people as you like, that are talking about these issues, but it doesn't really, you know, it's not going to have such an effect as having the leader of the world pointing out these issues. With what appears to be a stable majority on the issue, with the centrist European People's Party, the European Conservatives and Reformists, the Patriots of Europe, and the Europe of Sovereign Nations Group, the motion passed through the EU Parliament on Wednesday by a margin of 418 in favour, 218 against, and 30 abstentions. And that's fantastic. That's three quarters of the Parliament voted for this. Twice the number voted for this as voted against it. And it was set up by all of these sort of centre-right populist coalitions. Perhaps most critically, the new regulations will allow EU member states to sign agreements with nations outside of the bloc to establish return hubs for migrants so that illegals no longer have to be kept within the borders of the country that they broke into. Again, I do wonder if we're going to see Rwanda in this again, mean, all the people on the left were attacking that. But now that the EU has brought this law in, I mean, it could be that countries such as Denmark or Sweden, they might start sending illegal immigrants to Rwanda or perhaps another African country. It could be done with another African country. I was saying years ago that Greece should do that. They should do a deal with an African country and just put the people that break into Greece into an African country. So finally, they are now doing something about this. Why did it have to take millions of Africans to swarm into Europe before they would do this? I mean, as it points out here, the original invasion that was referred to as the migrant crisis took place in 2014. I mean, that was 12 years ago. And it really hasn't let up since then. They're still coming in. Look at Boris Johnson's rule, for instance. I think it was 1.2 million people came into the country. Of course, they will talk about net figures. Talking about net migration is a scam, really. And it really proves that the government cares nothing at all for the indigenous people, just by the fact that they measure net migration. They don't care how many indigenous people leave the country, so long as they are replaced by people who are non-indigenous. I mean, that's what net migration shows. It shows a government that does not care at all what sort of person they have in the country, just so long as they have the numbers that they want, which is a real insult to the people that built the nation, effectively. And it's the same in every European country. They all talk about net migration. It's a scam. And also, those figures continually go up, as Mark Ouellette has pointed out. When they give us these figures of net migration, it's always approximately. And then over the next year, you will see that they get revised upwards and upwards. I mean, they use this to claim that under Boris Johnson, it was only something like 600,000 or 700,000 migrants, net migration, of course, but it was 1.2 million migrants that actually came into the country, which I think means that one in 20 people arrived in the last 10 years, some ridiculous number like that. Nigel Farage pointed it out, and people claimed that this was hate speech. Where is he getting these figures from? But it was the accurate figures when you actually look at the numbers that are coming to the country and you look at how many people there are in the country. This policy in the EU was first put forward by Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's government in Rome, which had partnered with the non-EU nation of Albania to create exactly such return hubs. And I think the Labour Party are even doing this as well. They're talking about sending people to Albania. Of course, Albania is on the borders of Europe, so I don't see what there is to stop them from breaking into Europe again if all you're going to do is send them to Albania. I think a country in Africa is much better because, as I say, because they're going back to the continent that they came from. They're going back to their own people. Surely, if what they are trying to do is find somewhere where there isn't a war going on around them, there must be other countries in Africa with no war that's going on. I mean, that's supposed to be, I think, the only legal reason for somebody to claim asylum or political persecution. And there are all these other countries in Africa that they could go to. Why do they have to come to Europe? It's interesting that Giorgia Meloni is doing this. I mean, Giorgia Meloni has had a lot of criticism for not actually living up to the mainstream hype. The mainstream hype was that she was going to be a fascist dictator, an ethno-nationalist. In actual fact, she's just been a populist. I mean, you couldn't really call her much of a civic nationalist. So to see her being the main thrust behind this is, again, it's positive. However, Meloni's plan was stymied by judicial activism within Italy and at the EU level. And this was her plan to send them to Albania as a sort of hub for them to go to. So Wednesday's vote represents a major victory for her government, which has spent considerable time and political capital in advocating for stricter migration rules behind the scenes at the EU level. So it was literally at the EU level that all this lawfare was going on. It was the EU that were using these lawyers to prevent Meloni from actually doing this and sending the illegal immigrants to Albania. So the fact that she's now succeeded in, at the top of the EU level in the parliament, getting a law change made means that they won't be able to do that anymore. I mean, it's quite an achievement, really, when you think about it. Responding to the new regulations, Meloni said, "We promised Italians we would change Europe, and we did it with courage, patience and determination, because our compass is clear. To respect the programme voted for by the citizens, point by point, we will not stop, and we will continue like this." And I hope she does. She really seems in a similar vein to Matteo Salvini. And when Matteo Salvini was there, as I think he was the vice president or something similar like that, was similar standing over there in Italy, he was really good as well. I mean, he stopped the boats, and again, the lawyers tried to go after him. They wanted to give him 6 to 8 years for kidnapping. They said kidnapping a ship, because he basically wouldn't let a ship dock in Italy that was full of migrants. He sent them off somewhere else. And in their eyes, that was him kidnapping these migrants and taking them to another country, because he wasn't going to let them break into his own country. So that's just an example of the sort of lawfare that these politicians have been up against. You think that pretty much the second in command of an entire country, and the judges and the legal system in his country are trying to lock him up for 6 years for preventing Africans from breaking into the country. So you can imagine that Giorgia Meloni must be up against similar. So to get a new law passed in the European Parliament to prevent that, say that doing this is entirely legal, I should imagine will really sort of stop the human rights lawyers in their tracks, basically. Remarking on the return hub scheme, she added, "This innovative solution has been resisted at every turn by the Italian and European left, but thanks to this government, it has now become a tool available to the whole of Europe." And remember, 2/3 of the European Parliament voted for this. So it really sort of says there must actually be more centre-right, or perhaps just more anti-illegal immigration parties in the European Union bloc than perhaps we at first thought. In addition to paving the way for return hubs, the pending regulations will fundamentally change how deportations are handled, imposing an obligation to comply on individual migrants. Those who fail to abide by court orders may face up to 2 years in detention, up from 6 months. Those who continue to refuse to comply also face the prospect of a lifetime ban from the European Union and expedited removal. And I don't quite understand that, talking about how deportations are handled. The obligation is on the individual migrant. So what's that? The obligation is on the individual migrant to turn up for his deportation. And if he doesn't turn up, then he could get 2 years in prison. Well, all he's got to do is evade the authorities, basically. I mean, that doesn't seem too different to what they're doing now. They will say, well, you're due to be deported. We'll come and get you on such and such a day. And they will have absconded, of course, by that time. Even when they put them in these hotels, they just abscond from these hotels. So I'm not quite sure what it means by imposing an obligation to comply on individual migrants, how different that already is from how it is today, or up until this law was passed. Meanwhile, countries that refuse to take their nationals back will face the prospect of having their aid frozen, visas suspended, and trade sanctions imposed in a move pioneered by the Trump administration in the United States. And this is a good idea. This is the sort of thing that should be done. You should be saying, well, if you're not going to take back these people that you don't want in your country, that we certainly don't want in our country, why should we be giving you all this foreign aid that we're giving you? Why should we be helping your country out? And the same, you can reward these countries that say that they will take them back. If one of these countries becomes one of these hubs that you can send illegal migrants back to, I'm sure they'll do very well out of it. European Union countries will pay them to take these people, even if they're not their own citizens. Because, of course, a lot of the people that break in, they throw their documents away because they know that if they have their documents there, people will know who they are and possibly know the sort of crimes that they've committed in the country that they're from. And this has always been a problem. They'll say, well, where do we deport them back to? We don't know where this person comes from. Where do we deport him to? Well, if you have a third country hub, as they're talking about here, you can deport anyone back there. It doesn't matter if they're from Africa or Afghanistan, Timbuktu. You can just send them to this this hub in Africa. They don't need to actually stay in Europe while their application for asylum is looked at, which is currently how it is. Now, what we need to see is we need to see Britain moving in this direction as well, which isn't unfeasible with the way that Keir Starmer is leaning so towards the European Union. He wants to join back up with the European Union. Well, here you go. Here's one of these sensible laws that the European Union have finally passed. MEP Marieke Ehlers of the Anti-Mass Migration Patriots of Europe group in the EU Parliament said, "This regulation puts the obligation exactly where it belongs, on the illegal migrant. The days of pampering are over. You have no right to stay, which means you have one simple obligation. Pack your bags and leave our territory. We are taking back control," she continued. "This agreement reinforces the sovereignty of national governments. Almost all provisions give member states the freedom to go further. We are handing back power to our capitals. This regulation is not perfect, and on its own it is no silver bullet, but it is a decisive step in the right direction." And I'll agree that it is a good step in the right direction. I mean, it will help them to deal with the illegal immigrants. But what about the mass legal immigration that's going on? What about the mass replacement of the European people with people from all over the world that have a bit of paper saying that they can come into the country? I mean, it doesn't matter if they have a piece of paper saying they're legal or they don't have a piece of paper and they're illegal. They are still displacing the native population wherever it goes on. And you're still going to get the same problems. I mean, even when you've got people like, for instance, a lot of the Islamic terrorists that we've had, they've been second generation immigrants. Their parents were immigrants. They moved to Britain or wherever. They had children. The children grow up. The children then become Islamic terrorists. So it doesn't really matter if they're legal or illegal. The same similar sort of problems can occur, and illegal immigration is really just a drop in the ocean. It's about, I don't know, 1-5% of all the migration that goes on into a country is illegal. It's really not that much when you look at the legal migration. And the concern is, it's about the indigenous people becoming a minority. It was only a few years back they would say that Britons are due to be a minority by the 2060s. And now we're pretty much almost a minority already in primary schools. In birthing wards, it's only something like 51% are Indigenous British. So literally a year or two away from being a minority in the birthing wards. So since we've been talking about this, since nationalists have been talking about this, they've ramped it up, really. They've just sped things up and brought even more people in. And when you see the Labour Party and they say, oh, well, people are upset at us, what is it? Well, we're not moving fast enough. We're just not moving fast enough. We need to pick up the pace. And that's what they say, as if things are not progressing fast enough in the replacement of the Indigenous British people, as if that's what people are concerned about. I know we've just had the results of the Makerfield election. I know Mark Collette will be dealing with that tonight, and we'll have it on Radio Albion on Monday. Basically, the Labour Party candidate, he got over 50% of the vote. The Reform Party, I think they got 35%. Restore got 7%. The Conservatives got 2%. So Andy Burnham, the Labour Party candidate, he actually got a massive majority. But I don't think that's because people prefer the Labour Party to Reform. I mean, if people have voted for Reform or voted for Restore as the mayor of Makerfield, what difference would that make? I mean, it would make no difference because it's not a general election. The reason why people have voted Andy Burnham in is because they know that he will then go for a leadership challenge to Keir Starmer. And it will effectively split the Labour Party in two. And people have just had so much of Keir Starmer. They think, well, this is the quickest way to get rid of him, is to vote Andy Burnham in. So I think that's what's happened there. I don't think it should necessarily be looked at that over half of the general population of Britain supports Labour. I mean, we saw in Wales that Labour lost, basically, in Wales for the first time ever. And Reform are now the opposition. And with what's happened with Henry Novak and this other attempted beheading in Northern Ireland, I think there will be more support for reform and restore. And the more restore moves to the right, the more reform also have to move to the right in order to keep their supporters. So I don't think it should necessarily be looked at as a big loss, this Makerfield election, because it does now mean that there will be a leadership challenge and there'll be a fight in the Labour Party between Andy Burnham and Keir Starmer. And, that really can't be that bad a thing. I know people are saying, well, we want Keir Starmer to stay in there and keep messing things up because he's dreadful. But really, I don't think it matters who it is that's in charge of the Labour Party. They're going to keep messing things up. And Andy Burnham is further to the left than Keir Starmer. So he will really push even more people towards the right, I would have thought, by the time of the general election. Let's continue here. While the new regulations will give member states greater authority and ability to remove illegals, it will be up to those in power at the national level to take advantage of such powers. This is the thing. So the laws are there that they now can be used by national parties, but will they actually use them? And of course, you do get a lot of parties in the European Union that are not actually in power in their own countries. For instance, when Britain was a part of the European Union, the BNP had two members of European Parliament, but they had no members of Parliament in Britain. All they had was MEPs. And that's the case for a lot of these nationalist groups. They don't actually have any representation in their country, but they do have representation at the European Union Parliament. And that's because the people in their country, They want to make a protest vote, so they vote for the nationalist party. But as far as the national party is concerned, they're a little bit wary of letting in a new party that hasn't got any credentials. So then they vote for the old parties, and you end up with a CDU in Germany, or you end up with the Tories or Labour in Britain. I think it's the same thing that happens in these other European countries, and the nationalist vote is the protest vote. And it's worked, though. I mean, they've managed to push through this new law at the European Union level. But as they say, it remains to be seen whether the national parties will make use of this law to deal with this problem. Indeed, some have raised concerns over whether pro-migration governments like Emmanuel Macron's in France will use the powers now available to them. And I did actually want to talk a little bit about French politics today with Grandpa Dan, but we'll leave that for next week when he's here, because I do think it's an issue that he will enjoy discussing with me. French MEP and the negotiator for the EPP group, François-Xavier Bellamy, described the new regulations as a turning point, saying that after decades of failure and years of deadlock, Europe is ending its powerlessness in the face of illegal immigration. No one can claim any longer that Europe has no tools to act with. The rules are now in place. The responsibility lies with governments to use them. Of course, this is the reason why these countries have always said up until now, well, we can't do anything about it. Breaks the ECHR, breaks the European guidelines, breaks the Schengen Agreement. We just can't do this. And this is one of the reasons why Brexit succeeded, because that was a proxy vote against anti-immigration. The British people were sick to the back teeth of immigration. And they thought the reason why we had so much of this immigration is because we were part of the EU. Of course, once we broke with the EU and we still get masses of immigration, it shows you that that was just an excuse, saying that the European Union didn't have the tools for us to remove these people was just an excuse. The fact was that the British government, the Conservatives, they didn't want to put a stop to immigration. They wanted to continue immigration for financial reasons. Maybe other reasons. I mean, on the left, they have admitted, they said we want to have lots of diversity to rub the right's nose in it. They want mass migration because it will upset their opponents. Whereas the people on the right, the Conservatives, they wanted more mass migration for financial reasons, because it will lower wages, it will raise up the price of houses. And of course, for the bankers right at the very top, it means there are more people to get into debt. And I think that's the real way they look at this. And rather than gross national product or gross domestic product, it's gross domestic debt. because all that money has to be created from somewhere. And the person that creates that money is the one that it's all owed to, isn't it, when it's all debt? So the more people the bankers can cram into a country, and with the better credentials that that country has for actually paying back the debt, the better it is for the bankers, isn't it? So they want more migration. They want masses of migration. They're the reason why we have this problem. I think it all goes back to the economical system that we have, which, as I've said many times before, is based on usury. That's the root of the problem. Anyway, it's very good to see that the EU have actually passed a decent law for once. It's a very positive showing that two-thirds of the European Union Parliament also voted for this. Almost makes me a little bit regretful that we left the European Union ourselves. But as I say, we'll have to see what Keir Starmer's response to this is, whether basically he says, well, if the European Union are doing it, we can do it as well, can't we? If the European Union can do it, surely Britain can do it as well. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. As I say, there'll be a new episode of Patriotic History following after this one. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.